70 strikeouts over five starts.
In September of 99.
Yeah. And he gave up four runs.
Four runs.
Yep.
That's that month.
Four runs on 20 hits. And six walks.
I bet he hit six guys.
only three, actually.
Only three, okay. All right.
Yeah.
It was a... you got to love it when a guy... So, all right, so in 1999, Pedro walked 37 guys. He threw 213 innings, by the way. With a 2.07 ERA. I think the league average ERA that year for starters was over 5.
It was something like, yeah.
First of all, he struck out 313, so it's 100 more than innings pitched. He walked 37, and he hit 9.
Yeah.
I mean, he hit what is that? That's 25% as many guys as he walked.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. League ERA 99 was 4.8.
Right, but if you take out the relievers.
Yeah.
My guess is that it goes up to 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even if it doesn't, you could still double Pedro's, I mean, just numerically double the number of his ERA, and it is above average.
Yep. Actually, let's see, the one that kills me is, so in that same year, so let's see, so
I hope you don't mind. I started recording a couple minutes ago. This is the Over the Monster podcast, episode number 112. I'm Matt Corey. That's Brendan O'Toole. The Red Sox are terrible, so we're talking about Pedro Martinez. Go ahead, Brendan.
Now, I was remembering from 99 when he had his 2.07. If I recall correctly, his ERA was 2.07. I think the second best in the league was 3.4.
That's the second best in all of baseball.
Yeah. What the hell? Somebody else, it was like the second best strikeout total was like 200.
Mm-hmm.
Just completely obscene. Here we go. So... Yeah, David Cohn had the second best ERA in the AL. It was 3.4. The next best win total was Cologne with 18.
How many did Pedro win?
23.
Oh, okay.
And, strikeouts. Pedro struck out 313, and Randy Johnson struck out 364. Nobody else in either league had more than 221, and that was Kevin Brown, who was with the Dodgers.
Which is still really good.
Yeah.
I mean, strikeout, and the crazy thing is strikeouts, you know, were harder to get at that point. I mean, strikeout totals have been going up more or less steadily since the beginning of baseball, and so something that makes Ned Yost, his decision to leave in... Or to bring in Aaron Crow.
Cameron Crowe might have been just as effective.
Well, he did manage to strike out not Joe Kelly, the other Cardinal, Alan Craig.
Oh, Alan Craig,
who may or may not be hitting around 100 for the Red Sox at this point.
Yeah.
So anyway, in conclusion, I guess we should talk about that means we should talk about the actual Red Sox right now as opposed to Pedro. But Pedro Martinez just silly good. If you want to warm your baseball heart over this coming cold winter in New England, I suggest you pull up Baseball Reference and just dig into Pedro Martinez's time with the Red Sox, because I mean, holy shit! It's just incredible what he did, and when you adjust it for context, you know, the fact that he was pitching in maybe one of the better hitters eras ever in a hitter's park in a hitter's league, and was so much better than everybody else. It's just, it's silly. And the way that, I mean, this year we're following, you know, Clayton Kershaw and the incredible season he's putting up. And if you listen to the Baseball Prospectus podcast, Effectively Wild, with Sam Miller and Ben Lindbergh, they just talked about Pedro the other day, actually. And Sam brought up some particularly good fun facts, which I, A, don't remember, and B, wouldn't tell you now anyway. So just go listen to the to that podcast. But it's just incredible what Pedro was able to do with you know, in general, but then when you adjust it, it's just silly.
I think that the one that kills me is I had meant to look this up because Kershaw obviously is out of his mind this year.
Yeah.
And it's just been great to watch. Clayton Kershaw with about 2 weeks left in the season, so probably two, maybe three starts, depending on whether the Dodgers lock it up.
Right.
He's at, according to Baseball Reference anyway, he's at 7.6 WAR.
Yeah.
Which is really good for a pitcher.
Yeah. Really good for anybody, actually. But
yeah. Pedro Martinez in 2000 was 11.7.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was not only the best pitcher in the league, but he was the best player in the league by that. Ahead of, like, in his prime final season with Seattle, Alex Rodriguez.
Right.
He only had 10.
Yeah. yeah, Pedro had... See, now I'm talking about Pedro again. That's mm-hmm. what I'm doing. Yeah, according to Baseball Reference, Pedro's 2000 season, he had 11.7 wins above replacement. In his 1999 season, he had 9.7. So he was at, you know, 11, 10, 12, roughly, depending. In two seasons, he basically put up 21 wins above replacement. So, yeah. Yeah. And finished second and fifth in the MVP vote during those two seasons.
Yep.
Yeah. So, anyway. Let's, if we possibly can, pivot off of the wonderfulness that is Pedro Martinez, and talk about the mediocrity that is the 2014 Red Sox. I think, you know, we haven't done a podcast in a little bit. I had Jared Carabas on from Sox Space a couple weeks ago, and that was fun. And we sort of, you know, bounced all over the place and had a nice conversation, and hopefully everybody enjoyed listening to that. But it's good to talk to Brendan again and have him on. We haven't felt a lot of urgency, I think, to have a podcast.
That'd be a good way to put it, yeah.
For obvious reasons. And but I think, you know, like Brendan said before I hit the record button, this season is petering to a conclusion, and I think he actually even said it better than that, but that was the essence of it. And so I think it bears watching or bears discussing, you know, what the setup is for the offseason. You know, we know the Red Sox are going to need some starting pitching. We know their outfield is jammed with a bunch of question marks. But I think it's worth talking about in specifics, just as sort of a pre-postseason kind of discussion. I mean, the Red Sox are obviously going to be, you know, their season's going to end in a couple weeks. You know, the playoffs will come, and that will be exciting and fun. And then it's going to be free agency, and it's going to be hit the ground running. And I don't imagine we'll rush to do a podcast during the playoffs. I mean, maybe if something comes up, but we'll certainly have some discussions during free agency. I would imagine the Red Sox will be quite active, both in trades in signings. But so let's start with well, I brought him up already. Let's start with Alan Craig. So when I said he's hitting around 100, sadly was not kidding. He's hitting 119. He has a 246 on base percentage, thanks to 7 walks. He struck out 25 times in 69 plate appearances, which works if you're hitting a bunch of home runs. He has 1 home run. And he's slugging 203, so his slugging percentage is below his on-base percentage. I think it's fair to say that he's been horrendous, and he was not very good with the Cardinals either this season. But he got MVP votes in 2013, and he got MVP votes in 2012. This is a guy who can hit, and I say that knowing full well that with the Red Sox, he has a 29 OPS plus. And the Red Sox just traded a very good pitcher in John Lackey, and a season of John Lackey next year at pretty much the most affordable dollar amount that any team has ever had for a for a pitcher of his quality. I mean, so they gave up something substantial for him. Do you see Alan Craig in the mix next year? Are the Red Sox going to look to get rid of him? I mean, can they go into next year counting on production from him? And if so, where would that production fit on the field, do you think? Well, let's stay away from the defensive thing. Just said that. Sorry.
The less said about his defense, the better.
Well, I just mean even where he fits in on the field. Like, just ignore that, and let's talk about can they get anything out of him next season? I mean, obviously, we've seen him at his career worst, really. But it is 69 plate appearances, in over 19 games, and he's been in and out of the lineup. He's clearly dealing with the same foot issue, I believe, that he suffered, last year before the playoffs or during the playoffs. So, boy, this is the longest, most rambling question ever. Can the Red Sox get anything out of Alan Craig next year and going forward? Brendan, go.
I mean, they can probably get something out of him. The thing with Craig is that a big part of his value the 2 years that he got MVP votes was, he hit very well with runners in scoring position, which is not the sort of thing that generally is considered a sustainable skill or really a skill at all. He had guys hitting in front of him who were on base a fair deal, and he hit pretty well behind them. But not much else. I mean, his RBI totals were very high. That's basically why he got MVP votes. The other thing is the classic, his BABIP was really high as well those two seasons. It's come down quite a bit, and he doesn't seem to have the peripheral skills to do much else. Like, he doesn't do much with... He doesn't walk a lot. He's not terribly disciplined at the plate, and he doesn't bring anything to the table defensively. If I'm... on my least charitable day, and the Red Sox are in last, so I'm not feeling charitable. I think when they traded for Alan Craig, I think my first thought was, so he's Will Middlebrooks, but 2 years older.
Well, and
without the power. Like, he's got some power, but, Middlebrooks' raw power is probably better.
Well, that is particularly uncharitable. So let me call you on that momentarily. Middlebrooks is a guy who had a great half season with the Red Sox, and when I say great, I mean it was good, and it was promising, which was part of the goodness was the promise that he could sustain it over, multiple seasons. He has not done that at all. Craig has done that. I mean, Craig, like I said, Craig finished in the top 20 in MVP. The last two seasons, obviously not counting this year, the last two seasons, 2013, 2012, he was MVP voters, whatever. But in 2012, Craig was 27. but he hit 307, 354, 522. You're right. There's not a huge difference between the batting average and the on-base percentage, but that is a super productive player. I mean, there are different ways to be good players than just getting on base. And I think as a sabermetric, movement sounds too over the top, but whatever. We're starting to realize that, that it's not all about your on base percentage. That's very important, but there are other ways to be a productive player. And as you noted, Craig doesn't have a lot of other skills to bring to the table. But if he's hitting 300, his on base percentage is going to be fine. For three consecutive seasons, he slugged 555, 522, and 457. His on-base percentage was 362, 354, and 373. That's 2011, 2012, and 2013. And granted, in 2011, he only played in 75 games and had 219 plate appearances. So, all right, selective sample. But since he became somewhat of a regular. I think the Red Sox look at him and see what he did with the Cardinals and see that, he's obviously injured and think that they're, when he becomes healthy, he can be that guy again. And he's on a team-friendly contract, assuming he can provide some offensive production. Do you think that we're putting... I mean, you would agree he's injured, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, if he's not injured, then he needs to retire. Because if this is... I mean, yeah.
Okay.
If he's hitting 119, then good Lord.
Right. So if he is injured, which we for the purposes of this conversation agree that he is, then he's obviously injured to a point where it's very hard for him to be on the field. When he is on the field, he's not hitting properly, and he's sort of in and out of the lineup, which I'm assuming is because of the injury. I mean, the Red Sox are a last place team, and he is new to the team, and the Red Sox obviously would like to see what they have in him. So you would think he would play as much as possible, but he's not. And the reason I think he's not is because of the injury. So without being a doctor, which I'm nowhere near being, I don't even watch TV shows about doctors. It seems to me that the Red Sox think that he can be something, but wow, watching him is painful. Do you think we're putting too much weight on this season where he's obviously played hurt?
This season he's been just absolutely dreadful all year. One thing I was looking through when you're citing his past seasons when he was successful, I mean, his on-base and his batting average are good. On the other hand, his slugging percentage dropped every year.
It did.
Ever since he started, playing a full schedule.
Right.
Dropped 30 points his first full year as a starter and dropped 70 the year after that. That's not great.
Although I would add to that, and I agree, it's not, but but you have to take some league context into effect. I mean, that's, we're sort of dealing with the giant drop off from, that huge offensive era that we were just discussing that Pedro was a part of. Well, Pedro pushed against it, but you know what I mean, that Pedro played during, and to this very pro-pitching era that we're in this year. And so I think part of that is at least some league context. His OPS plus dropped also, but not nearly as precipitously as you would think. From 2012... to 2013, he had that, whatever that is, 65-point drop in slugging percentage, and his OPS dropped 46 points, but his OPS plus only dropped 8 points. The average player was not as good in 2013 as an average hitter as they were in 2012, is I guess my point. And that's sort of a continual trend over the last 4 or 5 years. I'm speaking generally because I don't have those numbers memorized, but I guess my position is that it's always hard for me as a analyst, as a fan, to watch a guy struggle and then think that guy can be good, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that it's especially hard to see Craig, who's hurt and has played really badly in Boston and all year, and go, that guy can be an MVP candidate because, God, he looks terrible. But he has been an MVP candidate, and he's been an MVP candidate when he was healthy. So it stands logically to reason that if he gets healthy, he could be maybe not an MVP candidate again, but still an above-average player. Am I missing something? Am I wrong about that? Maybe I am. It wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, I don't know. I look at Alan Craig and I see a bat and not much else who's not that productive a bat. And that's pretty much it. I also worry about, the injury. It's like if his injury is lingering from 2013, that's a problem.
Yeah, I agree.
And, if he can't get the reps, and also I think the other thing is, I don't see the Red Sox being in a great position to take on a veteran project when they have rookies who can almost certainly do something at least better than what he's doing now. Whether they have anybody who could do like his 2012 .354 on base, .522 slugging, I don't know. But I don't know. I've always been underwhelmed by Alan Craig for some reason.
I think it's interesting because one of the things that the Red Sox have sort of focused on, it seems to me, certainly in the draft, but even going back to when they signed Carl Crawford, they've been looking for guys with a large skill set, right? So mm-hmm. not guys who just do one thing, but guys who do lots of different things, can provide value in lots of different ways on the field. I mean, that was even one of the arguments for Adrian Gonzalez, who is, one of the slowest human beings on the planet. Mm-hmm. But he's an excellent defensive, or he was at the time, excellent defensive first baseman. He hits for average. He hits for power. He hits the ball all over the field. But he also brings, plus production defensively. And, the same at the time, could be said about Carl Crawford, an above-average hitter, above-average speed, very much above-average defensively. These were guys they thought could add a lot to lots of different parts of the team. And the Red Sox have sort of, it seems like drafted that way a lot recently. A lot of the guys they're bringing up, can be plus players on both sides of the ball. You look at Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, who probably would never be an above-average shortstop, but plays shortstop and could probably be an average to a slightly above-average third baseman. Of course, Jackie Bradley, who we thought could hit and has hit at every level except the major leagues and now apparently AAA. But his defense was, so outstanding. I mean, he could provide value in different ways. Alan Craig is not that, and that is sort of interesting to me. I mean, you lose that one skill, and all of a sudden you become a net negative, whereas a guy like, I guess Adrian Gonzalez, his defense could slow down, his batting average could drop, and he would still have power, et cetera. I'm not the world's biggest Alan Craig fan either, for that reason. But I do think that there is a good chance that he will be an above average hitter again if he gets healthy. Now, again, not a doctor. I have no idea if he can get healthy, and you make a good point saying that, he's been injured all year, so that's not exactly screaming, I'm about to get healthy. I don't know what the medical say. I don't know what his prognosis is. I guess I'm sort of willing to leave that in the hands of the Red Sox, who traded a lot of value for him, right? I mean,
well, not just him.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
They also got a number four starter out of it.
Debatable.
I decided to be generous to Joe Kelly because I'm so down on Alan Craig.
That was nice of you. I immediately pushed back against your number four. You may have noticed. Yeah, I mean, we may have discussed this trade. I think we did discuss this trade at the time,
yeah.
And I don't think either of us love either of these players. You know, it's not that there's not upside on them, but these would not have been the guys that I, and I gather you, would have gone out to acquire for John Lackey. Now, I'm not going to get back into that whole trade, whatever. Those guys are, you know, he's over there, these guys are here, so... But, yeah, I think that there's a good chance that Alan Craig can become an above-average hitter again if he can get healthy. So the question to me is, can he get healthy? And I don't think that's a question either of us can answer. I mean, would you say if he gets healthy, you don't think he'll be an above-average hitter again? That's a perfectly reasonable position to take, by the way. I don't mean to put negative words in your mouth or whatever.
Yeah, I think if he's healthy again, he can become a pretty good hitter. And I don't know. And that, of course, brings up the where does he fit on the field, because I'm not sure.
Right.
Because, right, pretty much, like, first base is taken, and please don't put him in the outfield, especially not with the other guys they've got.
This whole Red Sox roster seems to be a collection of dominoes on top of a house of cards. As soon as you start moving one around, the entire thing just collapses. But independent of everything else, could not Alan Craig play left field in Fenway Park?
Well, Manny did it for 8 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
right.
Yeah, sure.
I think there is a spot for him, and if there's going to be a guy who is a bat first. Guy like Craig, assuming the bat comes around, I think that is a spot that they could put him at. There's been talk about trade Napoli and put him at first base. I don't want them to do that. They signed Napoli for a reason. Napoli is a good player on both sides of the ball. Again, he's on a reasonable contract. There's no reason to trade Mike Napoli. He's a step in the right direction towards getting to the playoffs. Trading him and putting Alan Craig at first base is adding another question mark to the starting lineup. I don't see any reason to do that. But I think Craig could play left field. I think that could happen, and I think that might be where they're at with him. And I guess that brings us to the outfield. I mean, boy, there sure are a lot of questions with this team.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, can Bradley hit at the major league level? Is one of them? Let's see. Wait. Well, hold on. Who else? Cespedes, can he play right field for the Red Sox? I mean, he's got the arm. Where does Mookie Betts fit in? Where does Rusne Castillo fit in? Am I missing somebody? Alan Craig.
And Daniel Nava.
Daniel Nava,
and,
right.
And Shane Victorino, for that matter.
There it is, Shane Victorino. Yeah, I wasn't really leaving out Nava in the sense that, you know, Nava hits righties, and his defense is what it is. I think he's... I think he's a good guy to participate in a platoon like that. And what is Craig? Is he hit? I forget. He's a lefty? He's a right-hander. Right-handed hitter, isn't he?
Yeah.
Okay. He and Nava could platoon. I mean, that's a thing that could happen. You don't have to have everybody playing the same position every day. You can move people around. I think Nava, despite how his season started, there's no reason not to have him on the roster unless somebody wants to give up a lot for him. I think he's with the step towards making the playoffs, I think he is that if used properly. And he is potentially a Hall of Famer if the Red Sox play Ned Yost managed teams every day. Yeah, with that in mind, though, I think we're I mean, holy crap. What is the Red Sox outfield in 2015 on opening day going to look like? I can't even I can't even finish that sentence is what I can't even do.
Yeah. I mean, so you figure one of Cespedes or Castillo will be there.
Well, they can't trade Castillo.
Yeah, right. I mean, you don't sign a guy to a 6-year deal and then instantly trade him.
You could, I guess,
but yeah. What's the point?
Right. I mean, they could trade him in a year, but that contract is a good contract if he's an above average major league player. But nobody knows if he's an above average major league player for sure now because he's never played in the major leagues, and that is the thing that makes that needs to happen before he has positive trade value.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, nobody would want him, including the Red Sox.
Yeah.
So I think he's got to play for at least a season before the Red Sox go shipping him out of town. I mean, I know a lot of people have talked about, let's send him to Miami for Stanton. Well, if the friggin' Marlins wanted him, they would have signed him.
Mm-hmm.
So I just interrupted you about 12 times, and so I apologize for that.
So it'll be almost certainly Castillo, just because, they signed him to a 6-year deal. They're going to play him. They pretty much have to.
Mm-hmm.
So you figure he's definitely slotted into something, probably right or center, because he seems to be speedy and good defensively.
Right.
It's like right now. Yep. Yeah.
That means Jackie Bradley is in Triple A.
Or traded. Yeah. Because that's the thing. So right now they've got Bradley and Betts and Castillo who can theoretically play center at Fenway.
Right.
We know that Bradley is an exceptional fielder.
Amazing.
Can't hit at all. In April and in, I think, June. Was it June or July? July. He hit passably.
Yeah, for a month.
In those 2 months, he had respectively an OPS of 716 and 672. And, especially given his defense and given the offensive era we're in, Jackie Bradley can OPS 700-ish and play that kind of center field, then keep him.
Right.
Because that's fine. Bat him ninth and let him make, 10 double plays from center field a year. And perfect. But he hasn't proven he can even do that. So again, Castillo has to start, which leaves sort of Betts, Bradley, Cespedes, Nava, and Victorino. I have absolutely no knowledge of this, but, it's conceivable that Victorino could retire. He's been in the game for a while. He's been hurt all year and most of the last couple of years. Really, 2013 was the only time he's been really healthy for the last few years. So it's conceivable. I don't think it's certainly not something the Red Sox will count on. If it were the Patriots, they would be quietly encouraging him to leave by dropping notes to Mike Rice. But that's a different sport. Victorino might stick around, and then you're in that interesting issue of you got, a $13 million bench player, or you play him in right. And then you've filled 2/3 of it just on contracts you have to play.
Yeah.
Which is not the greatest way to build a ball club.
I agree. But I think, obviously the Red Sox see something in Castillo.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not the only ones, by the way, I should say.
Right.
I think they are going into 2014. They're going into 2015.
Yep.
I'm old. They're going to 20, 2015, you know, thinking they're going to have an above average center fielder with Castillo. And that's, I think that's part of the team's plan. And that's going to be a, you know, a centerpiece or a, that's not what that's called. That's going to be something that they're going to build on this offseason. That's a known to the team. I mean, they wouldn't have spent $72 million on this guy and given him the contract they did unless they thought that he could come in and you know, be a major part of the team next year. So, you know, fans may disagree with that one way or the other, but I think that's the way that is. So, yeah, I think I agree. Castillo is going to be in center starting, you know, next year. And, yeah, Victorino is really interesting, man. I don't know how that's going to work out. I mean, when he's healthy, he's obviously a good player. You know, again, we're there with the health. I don't know. I feel like the Red Sox already got really lucky with the retiring thing of, you know, this past.
Oh yeah, Dempster. You know, yeah,
Dempster. Yeah, I can't see someone else passing up $13 million.
Mm-hmm.
That seems unlikely to me. I think, and you know, I think Victorino, he doesn't have any trade value right now, obviously. But, you know, if he proves he's healthy, he will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially as the season goes on, if he proves he's healthy. And, you know, if he's not healthy, well, the Red Sox were going to pay him that $13 million anyway.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is he'll be on the roster and they'll play him, you know, when they can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, and if they get, you know, 80 to 100 games out of him, that's terrific. You know, and Nava, of course, will spot in there somewhere. And if Craig is healthy, he'll spot in there somewhere. What do you think about Mookie Betts? And then I want to go back to Jackie Bradley. But where does Betts fit? I mean, there's been talk of trading Dustin Pedroia. I heard Chad Finn say that, and I love Chad Finn. He's awesome. But I shake my head when I hear anyone say that. They're not going to trade Dustin Pedroia. That is absolutely not going to happen. I mean, you don't see guys traded with that many years left on the deal. You know, that's a lot of money for some team to take on for a guy who's been hurt. I mean, for all the reasons that the Red Sox would want to trade Dustin Pedroia, you know, no other team is going to want to acquire that kind of deal, even though it's a team friendly contract. I can't imagine that scenario even occurring. I mean, a year after signing him to that deal, turning around and dealing him, I can't wrap my head around that happening. Sorry.
Yeah. yeah. Let's see. So, right, that leaves basically two guys that probably deserve to start. So Cespedes and Betts.
Right. I forgot about Cespedes. Holy shit.
Yeah. So Cespedes is basically, you know, the one guy here who's, you know, sort of a proven healthy major leaguer.
Trade him. Get him out of here.
Yeah, right. That's pretty much it. like he's got 1 year left on a pretty friendly deal. So yeah, he seems to be the one that has the obvious, you know, trade value. You know, he's a fun player to watch. He's a productive player in a lot of ways. He's a not productive player in some other ways. But yeah, he seems like the obvious trade candidate. And yeah, Mookie Betts, I mean, he's been great. He's been absolutely great at every level this year. And he, you know, he same kind of thing. He does a little bit of everything. He's, you know, he's not Jackie Bradley in center, but he's good. He's, you know, he's great on the base paths. He's terrific at the plate.
Yeah.
And he seems to be, you know, just sort of one of those high energy, high effort guys that every team always wants.
Yep.
So yeah, Mookie is an absolute, you have to start him in the outfield or you have to trade him. Because like that player needs to be giving your major league team value.
Right.
And, you know, so, yeah, it pretty much comes down to, do you start Mookie Betts and then you've got, you know, probably sort of tentatively bets Castillo Victorino as probably your outfield, which, you know, would be, if everybody's healthy, kind of astounding defensively.
Well, I guess in that scenario, you'd have to trade Cespedes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Assuming you trade Cespedes. But yeah, it's like if Victorino isn't healthy, and I mean, you know, that's the other issue is you, like, Cespedes seems like the guy you trade at the winter meetings because that's when he'll have, you know, the most suitors.
Right.
Because free agency will have sort of waned off and it's time to start trading guys. But you don't know if Victorino's healthy until April 1st. And that's a problem. But if that's the case and you've got, you know, Castillo and Betts are penciled into two of the slots and you can make something work with what you've got left in right, or in left, he'd probably have Castillo and Betts in center and right. But otherwise, yeah, if they're not planning to start Betts, then he has to be the centerpiece of a big trade. You know, he has to be, you know, the number one guy in the trade that gets Cole Hamels or Giancarlo Stanton.
Right.
You know, because too much value to centers or so yeah, Betzel, yeah, he'll start somewhere next year. I kind of hope it's Boston, because on the one hand, I really want Giancarlo Stanton, but you know, I also like Mookie Betts. So
I think I think you're absolutely right. I think Betts has to play somewhere. And as it stands right now, unless they're going to... Now, we haven't brought it up yet, but the Red Sox don't actually have a third baseman going into this season.
They have a few. They just... They have Alan Craig and Will Middlebrooks.
Exactly. So I don't see them going into 2015 with either of those guys as the starter. I can't...
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. So that leaves a couple possibilities. And they have, you know, it's been brought up elsewhere that maybe Mookie Betts can play shortstop. I feel like if he was going to play shortstop, this is the time for them to start doing it. I would be surprised, very surprised, if even given an entire off season to prepare, if the team said, okay, we're going to make you our shortstop. I think that probably that scenario has been explored. And you know, kind of sadly, my guess is it for whatever reason that the team doesn't see him as a shortstop. So, I don't think that's going to occur. I mean, you know, that would push Bogarts to third, and then you've got your left side of the infield for the next 6 years. But I guess that's not happening. And so, you know, there really isn't a spot for Betts on the roster the way it is now. You know, in a couple years, things could be different. I mean, Castillo will be here for the long haul, you know, unless they deal him, obviously, but that's true of anybody. It seems like the two positions that Mookie Betts plays are second base and center field. Those are the two positions the Red Sox have locked up long term. You know, and as fun as it is to watch him, man, I feel it in my gut that they are going to deal him. He's not going to be on the team next year. He is at peak value. He's super young. He's awesome. He's clearly got all these skills. He's had only success at every level, including the majors. And I mean, he's Xander Bogaerts last year without the postseason success.
Mm-hmm.
And probably not quite the pedigree. I don't think anyone thinks that he's going to hit 30 homers like people are expecting Bogarts to do. But you know, he just oozes productivity from every part of the game. He can positively impact a team, and I think he's going to get dealt. I don't think I think before they signed Castillo, there was an argument that, you know, that he could be your center fielder.
Mm-hmm.
That argument is out the window now. They're not trading Castillo. Center field is where they see him. And honestly, center field is probably a big part of his value at this, you know, Castillo. You know, given what we know of him, being that his speed is his major skill. That they think he can be a plus defensive center fielder. you know, he can get on base, you know, probably below average, but he can maybe score an above average number of runs once he's on base. You know, he can hit for decent average, and he'll maybe hit some homers. So, yeah, I just don't see a spot for Betts. It doesn't, like you said, it doesn't make sense for them to send him to AAA. Like, there's nothing to be gained there. I mean, obviously, this is dependent upon there being a market that the Red Sox, you know, there's got to be a trade out there. There's a two-way thing. You know, the Red Sox have to get some value in return. But obviously, this is a team that needs pitching, and they need star power. They need guys who aren't question marks. yeah, I just can't see Betts on this team next year. I just can't. He would be so much fun to watch too, but I'm every time I see him, I'm like, that guy's gone. There's no way they keep him. Yeah, that's just not happening, I don't think. So yeah, that would be my guess. And then I think you know, they'll probably make Cespedes available during the
game,
you know, and if the right deal comes along, they'll probably take it. But I don't think they're going to rush to deal him with the uncertainty around Victorino. You know, I've heard people say that the Marlins are going to try this offseason to extend Stanton.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the injury that Stanton suffered, getting hit in the face with that ball, with the pitch. I don't know what that's going to do to those negotiations. That could complicate things. You know, maybe the Marlins are not going to want to extend a guy who just suffered that injury and hasn't played since. And clearly, you know, Stanton isn't going to want to give them a discount because he got hit in the face with a ball. Maybe that makes makes that stuff more complicated and difficult. And the Marlins do realize they have to deal him, but I don't know how that plays out.
I don't buy that they're trying to extend him. I just don't. It's the Marlins. It's spending money on players, and that's not how that team functions. Like, honestly, the only thing this changes is it gives them an excuse. Like, oh well, you got hit in the face. We can't extend you now.
Well, you know,
that's pretty much it.
I think they will try to extend him. I think that they're going to try to get a team friendly deal, and they'll try to buy out some free agent years. And you know, they'll probably try to do what they did with, you know, when they signed Reyes and they signed Burley. I mean, they gave those guys sort of oddly structured contracts. Like, you know, Burley is going to be paid, I forget what the salary is next year, but it's silly. His contract is, he's going to be one of the highest paid players in baseball next year.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because of the way the Marlins, structured the salary in his contract. He was paid, let me scroll, please, Baseball Reference. First year of his deal, he was paid $6 million. Then, shockingly, the Marlins traded him.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. And in 2013, he was paid $11 million, almost twice what he made in 2012. I've got my years wrong. 2012, he made $6 million the first year of his long-term deal. 2013, he made $11. 2014, he made $18. And 2015, next season, he's going to make $19 million.
Yep.
So, you know, the Marlins got 1 year of Mark Burley for $6 million and then traded him. And if memory serves, they did the same thing with Jose Reyes.
Yep.
And so I wouldn't be shocked if they tried to do something, not that specifically, but something along those lines with Stanton, where they, you know, give him a 7-year contract extension or something to buy out, like, you know, 3 free agent years. And, you know, he gets paid $5 million or $7 million next year, less than he would make in arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, you know, when the money starts going up, then they trade him the next offseason. That would probably even increase his trade value because you'd have cost certainty attached to him, and you'd have him for longer. Let's see. Yeah, Reyes made, I had to look this up because the Marlins are pieces of crap. Reyes actually doesn't have quite, well, I take that back. Reyes had a longer contract. So his 1 year in Miami, he made $10 million. that his first year in Toronto after they traded him, so the second year of his contract, he made $10 million. Then his contract jumped up to $16 million this year, and he's going to make $22 million for the next three seasons.
Yeah.
So they totally did that. Anyway.
And that's, I think that's why that I don't think will happen with Stanton, because Stanton can read. like he was here, he was in Miami when that happened. Like,
right, right.
And you know, if you're Giancarlo Stanton, you have to be looking at that and go, well, I could sign this, you know, 6 year, $70 million backloaded contract with Miami. Or I could make $11 million in arbitration this year, because he'll make at least that.
Right.
And then either way, in 2 years, I'll be making $20 million in Boston or New York.
Right.
So I might as well hold out till then. Wait for like the 6 or 7 year deal from the Giant team.
No, I think that is entirely possible. I also think it's entirely possible that he signs this, you know, that whatever it is, $100 million extension or something like that from the Marlins. I actually do think that he just got hit, and especially now, he just got hit in the face with a baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just don't know what could happen. You know, he could get into a car accident. You know, something bad could happen, and that would prevent him from being able to sign that contract, which it looks like right now that he will totally get. But if he signs an extension that that allows him to reach free agency at some point, I mean, he's still pretty young. I still haven't even called him up. I've just been focused on the ridiculous contracts that the that the Marlins signed everyone to. But I believe he's 24 this season, and he'll be 25 next season. Is that correct?
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, that's right. So he's 24 this year. God, that's insane. He is as old. Bogarts is younger than him. He's as old as Jackie Bradley.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He's got like 120 something career home runs.
154, as a matter of fact.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yep.
But he has some serious injury concerns. I mean, he's never played more than games. Only played 150, 123, 116, and 145. So mm-hmm. he's missed time with injury before. I think it's possible that he takes the money. And even if it's structured that way, I mean, he's going to get traded whether he signs that contract or not, right? And he's not going to have a say in it one way or the mm-hmm. other. So why wouldn't you take the guaranteed money and then hit free agency? I don't know. I mean, it could happen either way, but I can see arguments for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not able to extend him, I would expect him to be dealt, and it wouldn't shock me if he was dealt this offseason. And I don't know if the Marlins, you know, have a great interest in Mookie Betts. You know, there are other teams with probably higher-end prospects than the Red Sox. The Red Sox have a lot of guys who will probably be good major leaguers, average to slightly above. They don't seem to have guys who are likely at this point to be perennial all-stars. You know, they don't have a Chris mm-hmm. Bryant like the Cubs do, a Jorge Solar like the Cubs do. And it might take, I don't even know, one or two of those guys to get Stanton. And if the Cubs offer those two guys, the Red Sox probably can't compete with that, unless they're willing to trade Bogarts, and even then they might not be able to compete with that. So it'll be interesting, but I do think that Mookie Betts will be dealt for somebody good. You brought up Cole Hamels, did you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess, I don't know, we're coming up on an hour, so that could be a topic for another time, but it's still utterly bizarre to me that they weren't willing to extend John Lester for whatever it is, a hundred and something million, and then they're going to trade. Now I'm making stuff up. This is me making things up. I don't know yeah. what the numbers the Red Sox and Lester were talking about. But if this were to happen and they didn't sign Lester to an extension uh-huh. last offseason, and then they turn around and they trade Mookie Betts for 4 years of Hamels
uh-huh.
at $100 million, which is what he'll make. What the fuck? But we'll get back. We'll get back.
Yeah,
if we need to,
we will then give the other potential opinion of if they didn't extend John Lester and then give $140 million to Max Scherzer, which would be what the unholy fuck. So
I see. I can rationalize that one, and we can have that argument then. I can rationalize that one. It's when they trade for the pitcher who's roughly mm-hmm. John Lester for just who makes slightly less for slightly right. fewer years. And you gave up this great prospect to get – anyway, whatever. All right. So, So it's going to be an interesting offseason. I think it will be. This is going to be this sort of – I don't even want to call them a team. This is a collection of players that is – is going to, in some way, likely to be scattered to the winds, and there will be other players from other teams that will come up, or come over to Boston, and I think the 2015 roster is going to look very different than the 2014 roster. But so I think the end of this season and the trade deadline was just acquire as much talent as the front office thought they could get their hands on. It's sort of the trade deadline version of. Draft the best player available. You know, you don't draft for need. You draft the best player, the guy that you think is going to be the best player. And so I think they did that. I think they acquired, the most talent they could find available in the, at the deadline, and that happened to be Kelly and Craig, I guess, and other players. And so they're just gonna go into the off season and see where they can improve the roster. And we here at the Over the Monster podcast. We'll be here with you during the off season, certainly to swear about it, probably, and to analyze it, and also, did I mention swearing about it? I think I did.
Yeah, there will be a lot of that.
Yeah. So if you don't like swearing, maybe this isn't your podcast. at least it won't be this off season. But I think in all seriousness, this will be an interesting off season, and I think that. This front office has shown itself to be, if nothing else, really flexible, and willing to go in different directions than we foresaw them going to. And that was a sentence. And so I think from that standpoint. They're pretty tough to predict. I don't think anyone saw the Dodgers deal coming. I think nobody saw the Alan Craig deal coming. There was there's probably going to be more of that this offseason. So anyway, is there anything else we should mention, Brendan?
Oh, I think we've pretty much beaten everything into the ground.
Yeah, I apologize for that. That was me. there was a point that I wanted to bring up with Jackie Bradley really quick. May I? I know
yeah,
it's
yeah.
been an hour. Okay. So. You mentioned, and not without good reason, Bradley's inability to hit. And there's if you go to his stat line and you click on the minor leagues and you look at how he hit coming up through the minors, this is the grain of hope that I have when it comes to Jackie Bradley. And I don't actually know. Now that the Castillo's here, I don't know. Whatever. We've talked about all the question marks and stuff. But this is the grain of hope that I grasp onto when it comes to Jackie Bradley. So, in 2013, Jackie Bradley played in Pawtucket, and he played in Pawtucket a fair amount. He had almost 400 plate appearances, 374. He hit .275 with a .374 on base percentage and slugged .469. This is on top of. Playing, he had in single A as a 21-year-old, he had a .933 OPS. In 2012, playing for high A, he had a 1,000 OPS. Playing for double A, he had an 800 OPS, and then that's in 2012 also. And then in 2013 in triple A, he had an 842 OPS. I mean, it's not hyperbole to say Jackie Bradley has hit at every level up until he reached the majors. Now, he reached the majors and he was awful with the bat. And they sent him back to AAA. And this is what he did in AAA. He hit .212, .246, .273. That's terrible. Now, this is what he's done in the majors this year. 207, 277, 278. Those are relatively similar lines. I think there's something that he's doing that I don't think it's a health or I don't know if it's a mental thing or if there's something wrong with his swing or whatever, but I think there is something to the fact that he hit before and he's not hitting now and he has the ability to hit. Before he hit in AAA, now he's not. He's not any different in age. Like, what is the difference? Why is he not hitting now in AAA? It's not that he couldn't hit in AAA before. He hit AAA really well. So I think there is a possibility that, you know, there's something wrong with his swing or there's something wrong with his stance and his blah, 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 something that that is correctable is the point, wherein he can become an average hitter, because that's all he has to do is be an average hitter, and then his defense is so yummy. So I think that that is possible. I think that's possible that he could go to AAA next year and hit. And that would be, you know, I don't know where he slots in now with the Red Sox. Like, you know, he had his chance to be the Red Sox center fielder for the next 6 years, and that chance is gone now. I mean, that, you know, they signed Castillo, unless Castillo can't play, which, you know, maybe he can't. I don't know. But anyway, so I think that Bradley's doing something wrong. I don't think it's just that he can't hit major league pitching. I think he's just doing something wrong that he didn't do before, and it's correctable, and he will be potentially able to correct it. So I remain optimistic on Jackie Bradley's offense, and that is my Jackie Bradley offense is not horrible, potentially maybe, speech. Hold for applause. All right. Thank you for listening to that, Brendan.
Yep.
He's not the best co-host in podcasting for no reason, folks. All right, so we're done. You can go to the Twitter and follow Brendan. Clearly, he's the one you should be doing that to. At Unexpected Base, if you you get an itchy follow finger and you want to follow me as well, it's at MattyMatty2000. And you can go to the iTunes and say nice things about us at the iTunes if you want to, and that would make us smile. And we like smiling because, you know, life can be nice when you smile. And we will be back. I usually say next week, but that's probably not true. I'm guessing we'll have another podcast in a couple weeks, maybe during the playoffs, maybe it'll be a month. But we will be back and we will be here to cover and discuss the off season. You can count on that. So for Brendan, I'm Matt, and thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.